Genesis chapter 22, reading from verse 1. And it came to pass after these things, that God did tempt Abraham, and said unto him, Abraham, and he said, Behold, here I am. And he said, Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will tell thee of. And Abraham rose up early in the morning, and saddled his ass, and took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son, and clave the wood for the burnt offering, and rose up and went on to the place of which God had told him. Then on the third day Abraham lifted up his eyes, and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said unto his young men, Abide ye here with the ass, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship, and come again to you. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering, and laid it upon Isaac his son, and he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and they went both of them together. And Isaac spake unto Abraham his father, and said, My father. And he said, Here am I, my son. And he said, Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering? And Abraham said, My son, God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. So they went both of them together. And they came to the place which God had told him of, and Abraham built an altar there, and laid the wood in order, and bound Isaac his son, and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Isaac stretched forth his hand, and took the knife to slay his son, and the angel of the Lord called unto him out of heaven, and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here am I. And he said, Lay not thine hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him, for now I know that thou fearest God, seeing thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from me. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold behind him a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram, and offered him up for a burnt offering in the stead of his son. And Abraham called the name of that place Jehovah Jireh, as it is said to this day, In the mount of the Lord it shall be seen. And the angel of the Lord called unto Abraham out of heaven the second time, and said, By myself have I sworn, saith the Lord, for because thou hast done this thing, and hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, that in blessing I will bless thee, and in multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of the heaven, and as the sand which is upon the seashore. And thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemies. The life and the ministry of Abraham is one that continues to challenge and to convict the lives of many people. His life and ministry can be summarized in four simple couplets of words. We have the thought of Abraham when he went out, and that is when God called him out of the land of the Chaldeans to come to the land of Canaan. And then we discover when he came to the land of Canaan that he went down. He entered into an environment that was marred and scarred with a famine. And in some measure, we would say it didn't work out as Abraham had perhaps thought in his mind. God had called him, and now as he comes to the land of Canaan, he finds that there is famine and barrenness before him. And so he goes down into the land of Egypt. He was there, of course, for a period of time, and he came up again, bringing Hagar, an Egyptian, with him. And then the fourth couplet of words that describe the ministry of Abraham is that he went on. And those four couplets are very suggestive and indicative of Abraham's life. But just for a few moments this evening, I want to bring your attention to what to many people is the most familiar part of his life, the directive that God gave to him to sacrifice his son Isaac. Now you will appreciate that we read in that opening verse, and it came to pass after these things. And that brings us back to a moment in the life of Abraham's household that was very contentious and very disruptive. Isaac had now been born, and Sarah, quite understandably, displays her maternal instinct towards her son of the birth. And as a direct result, she became uncomfortable with the presence of Hagar and Ishmael in the home. And one day she said to Abraham that he was to cast out the bondwoman and her child. We are told in the scriptures that this thing was very grievous in Abraham's sight. But it does teach us a solemn lesson that many of our contentious issues originate within our family life. The one place that the devil will always seek to attack and always strive to disrupt is the family unit. And you can be assured as a child of God at some time in your Christian life that the devil will do everything possible to pressurize and to pain your heart with family issues. This was certainly so in the case of Abraham. And he had to fulfill the directive of Sarah on this matter, although God wonderfully and graciously reassured him that he would be assured of the fact that God would look after Hagar and Ishmael. And then some 13 years later, Abraham is challenged with the issue that we've read about. He is told by God here to take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will tell thee of. Now you know the story. But when we come to the concluding part of this story, we find that Abraham, he called the name of that place, and this is told in verse 14, Jehovah Jireh. Now immediately, you will say that means the Lord will provide. And that's true. But there is another interpretive meaning to that name, Jehovah Jireh, that I wish to major upon for these moments. It just simply means the Lord will see to it. You can get the sense of that at the end of verse 14. As it is said to this day, in the mount of the Lord it shall be seen. Now, when someone comes to ask you to do something, you may well have said to them, leave it to me, I will see to it. That's what the Lord is saying here. He is saying to the servant, whatever the burden, whatever the issue, whatever the challenge, leave it to me, I will see to it. Now it's certainly possible that someone here tonight is carrying a burden. A burden that perhaps the congregation know nothing about. And I want to leave this word with you. The Lord is saying to you, whoever you might be, leave it to me. I will see to it. But I want you to appreciate that this is not a fatalistic directive. There is a great danger in being a fatalist and just simply saying, well, whatever will be, will be. That's not the teaching of the Bible. It's not the doctrinal foundation upon which we should build our faith, as indeed we will discover here in the case of Abraham. Because we learn that the Lord will see to it on the principle of giving. Now you might think right away, that's a reference to the ram that was caught in the thicket, and you would be quite justified in thinking along that direction. But I want you to see another side to that principle of giving that I deem to be exceedingly important. And that is at the moment when Abraham was sending Hagar and Ishmael away. And as he was doing so, we learn in verse 14 of Genesis 21, "And Abraham rose up early in the morning and took bread and a bottle of water and gave it on to Hagar, putting it on her shoulder." Now you might see this as maybe innocuous or unimportant. Giving to Hagar and to Ishmael some bread and some water. But I want you to value this very significantly. Because what Abraham was doing here was going to be rewarded. It's a principle that we need to embrace. How you and I treat each other is how the Lord will treat us. How we treat the Lord's people is how you will be treated by the Lord. Do we not learn this in Matthew 25, where the Lord Jesus Christ said to his disciples, "Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me." The psalmist David took, we might say, the opposite challenge, but nonetheless an important challenge to his heart, when he said, "If I regard iniquity in my heart, the Lord will not hear me." I've often personally been challenged by the words that Paul wrote to the church at Galatia, when he said, "If ye bite and devour one another, take heed that ye be not consumed one of another." I trust you'll not misunderstand me when I say this. I have a stomach for fighting the Lord's enemies. I have no stomach for fighting the Lord's people. For how I treat the Lord's people is how I believe the Lord will treat me. And on that principle of giving, we can see how Abraham giving bread and water to Hagar and to Ishmael was now going to hear those words, "Leave it to me. I will see to it." But you will also appreciate that on that principle of giving, there is that great encouragement from Malachi 3, where we are to bring in our tithes into the storehouse, "that there may be meat in mine house, and prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven, and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it." I think I can speak here with a degree of authority. I'm pretty sure that the most of you know the secret of tithing. It's something that's beyond me, I must confess. That the Lord always gives you back more than you ever give to Him. We don't do it for that reason. Our giving is to glorify God. And yet it's based on that wonderful principle, "Them that honour me, I will honour." And there is no question in my mind on the issue that whenever you give to the Lord, the Lord gives you back good measure, that's pressed down and It's running over, and many of you will say amen to that. But there's something more. The church at Corinth entered a stage in their existence when some had difficulty in accepting the principle of giving. And Paul, when he was writing to them, he uses the church at Macedonia, or the churches of Macedonia, as an example. And he reminds the Corinthians that the churches in Macedonia were in deep poverty, and yet we learn that they abounded unto the riches of their liberality. And then Paul touches on something that is of great importance to you and also to me. For he said these words, and they, I believe, are great value to us, and this they did in terms of their giving, not as we hoped, but first gave their own selves to the Lord, and unto us by the will of God. In other words, before they gave their tithes and their offerings, they gave themselves. Do you see it here in Genesis 22? When God did tempt Abraham and said unto him, Abraham, what did he say? Behold, here I am. Before there was any manifestation of an offering, Abraham gave himself. That's the principle of giving. And the Lord will say to you, leave it to me. I will see to it. But the Lord will also see to it on the presentation of grace. I've read this account many times, as you have, but I do not discover one suggestion here that Abraham resisted the call that God was placing upon him. It was difficult, I'm sure. It was emotional. Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I tell thee of. There's a sense of calmness here. There is not a thought that Abraham was perplexed or confused. In verse 3 we read that he rose up early in the morning and saddled his ass and took two of his young men with him and Isaac his son and cleaved the wood for the burnt offering and rose up and went on to the place of which God told him. I notice something. There's no detail now about those few days. Those days of journey from Beersheba towards Moriah, we don't read of them. What happened, what took place, the conversations, if any. But verse 4 brings us to the third day. And on the third day, Abraham saw the place. And it was only when he saw the place that he could say to the young men that were with him in verse 5, abide ye here with the ass, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you. In other words, when his sight was on the place of the sacrifice, he saw God's plan unfolding. He was confident now that I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you. Whenever Paul was writing to that Corinthian church in his first epistle, he highlights 10 problems in the church. Those 10 problems have been in the church ever since. I don't care what church it is. You will find that those 10 problems that he outlines in 1 Corinthians will be somewhere found. There was divisions and lack of discernment, and there was a divorce issue and so on. And there were matters there that have been replicated right throughout time. But the interesting thing is this, that when Paul dealt with those problems, he only gave one solution. He did not give 10 different solutions to the 10 problems. He only gave one. And what was that solution? He pointed them to Calvary. And if you read carefully through those 16 chapters, you will find that 10 times he directs the church to the cross. Can I say this lovingly? It's only when we turn our eyes to Calvary that things begin to make sense. As it was for Abraham here. His eye now was on the place of sacrifice. And it's not insignificant to note that in the book of Psalms we have a series of Psalms that are titled the Song of Degrees. And the reason why they are called the Song of Degrees is because they represent the songs of the pilgrims as they ascended towards Jerusalem. And what a tremendous section of Psalms from 120 to Psalm 134 we have there. And we get a sense, or we get an understanding of the intensity of the people's feelings as they make their way towards the city of Jerusalem. And they had lifted up their eyes to the hills from whence came their help. And we can think of Psalm 124, if it had not been the Lord who is on our side, when men rose up against us, and then they had swallowed us up quick when their wrath was kindled against us. Psalm 126:3, the Lord hath done great things for us, whereof we are glad. Let Israel hope in the Lord from henceforth and forever. And right throughout those section of Psalms, we find the message is exhilarating, it is uplifting, it is encouraging, because their eyes were upon Jerusalem. It's good, dear child of God, to keep your eyes upon Calvary. When somebody says something about you, turn to the cross. When somebody hurts you, consider him. When somebody does something on you that is unkind and unpleasant, you might feel bitter. Come to the cross. Spend time there. For it was on the third day that Abraham lifted up his eyes and he saw the place afar off. Hence, the Lord will see to it, on the principle of giving, the Lord will see to it, on the presentation of grace. He gives you grace. I was just sharing with the dear friends today of a horrid incident that involved one of her church members. A young lad of 22 who was engaged to get married. He worked for an evangelistic outreach distribution, printing tracts and sending them throughout the world. And he wanted to save money to get married, and he joined the part-time army in Northern Ireland. And one Wednesday night, just a little over 25 years ago, he was closing one of the security gates, and the IRA murderers, they detonated a bomb, and he and his colleague were killed. I had to go that night to identify him in the hospital. It was a Wednesday night. The next morning was our early morning prayer meeting at 5:30. I was able to go from the home to the prayer meeting. I told the friends that Fred had been murdered the night before. We had maybe 15 people at the prayer meeting. This dear man started to pray, and he broke down in tears. Dear lady tried to take up the time of prayer. Another dear man. That whole morning, there wasn't one or two words spoken in prayer. There was just the sob of the heart. I want to tell you this, if I'm right in saying this, it was the best prayer meeting I was ever in. You see, the Lord is saying to us, leave it to me. I will see to it. On the presentation of grace. But just in closing, the Lord will see to it on the preservation of generations. And we see this in the verse 17, where the Lord promised Abraham that in blessing I will bless thee, and in multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of the heaven, and as the sand which is upon the seashore, and thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemies. And isn't this a remarkable thing, that from this very moment, although it seems in the history particularly of the children of Abraham, that they were about to be totally annihilated, it's remarkable that during the Second World War, it was considered that there were 9 million Jewish people in the world, and 6 million of them were killed, were murdered in the Holocaust. 2/3 of an entire population. But God has preserved them. There was an agnostic came one day and said to me, in one word or two words, how could you prove the Bible is true? And I just simply said, the Jew. Through one man's obedience, God said, in blessing I will bless thee, and in multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of the heaven. Wouldn't it be wonderful if this little congregation here would become the epicenter of a gracious awakening? If ever there was a time when God should come and awaken America and awaken the United Kingdom, it is surely now. And yet, One man, nailing his theses to the door in Wittenberg, became an instrument of a Reformation. Is there one person here that God would take up? And God would say to them tonight, leave it to me. I will see to it. I don't want to get into a controversy or debate on eschatology. But I do believe this, that whenever my gracious Master comes back for his church, he is not coming back for a defeated people. Does not the Bible say he is coming back for a bride adorned for her husband? And is not the bride at her most beautiful when she's meeting her husband? Leave it to me. I will see to it. Allow me to close with a personal thought. I do not know what you're facing this week. Some of you might be facing personal issues. And I'm glad you've come tonight. Some of you might be concerned about your health. Maybe an operation. Maybe about your business. I cannot really tell standing here. But what I can say is this. God would want you to hear the message. Leave it to me. I will see to it. And he'll do that for those who are not saved as well. You can't work your salvation. You can't manufacture it. You cannot achieve it. Dear repentant heart, leave it to me. God is saying, I will see to it. Jehovah Jireh, thank you so, so much for listening. May the Lord bless you.